This is the Multiracial Identity Podcast. I'm Robert Cox. Welcome to episode 5. I had intended on publishing a different episode this week, and I talked about it last time that I had in mind, but it was an earlier than expected announcement. The Office of Management and Budget, basically the chief statistician of the United States as well, and really the Office of the President of the United States, they finally revealed what the changes will be to that damn Directive 15 list of officially recognized races in America. And like I said, it's earlier than expected. And so I've been talking about this for a while now, actually. So like I said, it's earlier than expected. And I've been talking about this since the start of the Multiracial Identity Podcast, basically, and about this impending decision due in summer of 2024. But I guess they didn't need that extra time. They didn't need to wait because clearly the decision had already been made. And so, basically, we in the multiracial community can now select all that apply. And that's what they came down with. That's the recommendation, it's select all that apply, apparently. So, but see, we could always select all that apply. That's at least for the last 24 years. So, this really wasn't any kind of victory at all. I mean, basically, what this essentially was a big middle finger to about 35 million multiracial people, you know. And before, like I say, before at least 24 years ago, we could, it's two races or more, or, you know, Tomer is what I've talked about on this podcast before. And that's select all that apply. And so the victory that finally came around that destroyed the erasure that had kept us invisible since the 1930 census, in 2000 we were able to two races or more and finally be counted as somebody as with more than one racial heritage. But you know, but now apparently this decision, after 24 years, now this decision is select all that apply. So basically what I've seen it as is, you know, I've talked about the Tomer, which stands for two races or more. Now we're SATA, select all that apply. And I can't really express how dehumanizing this is to me, and that whole idea is to me. And I've talked before about this, and during my discussions with Susan Graham of Project Race, you know, that the bureaucrats and statisticians that keep track of us all, they have names for us. They've had names for us for a while now, at least since they've had to start aggregating our data and start counting us as more than one race. And it's anything like we've talked about, Tomer, which is two or more races, combination people. I mean, you know, but so before it was Tomer, and now it's SATA. These are racial classifications. These are racial descriptions or categories. These are terms. These are not terms that you use to describe a racial identity. And obviously, I'm up on the multiracial identity thing. That's the name of the podcast. You know, so, and I've talked about it as a kid, and this is a recent thing with multiracial for me. I'll be honest with you. I can remember as a kid, and I've talked about this, where I decided to use mulatto. And I really did. And family was aghast. My mom and my aunt knew. And I said, hey, this is a racist slur. And I've talked about this before, but I didn't know any other terms, but I also didn't realize that it was just a racial slur. It was just a description by slave masters. It's not a term for a racial identity. It's not the proper noun of a racial group and, by extension, a racial identity. So it's interesting, though, too, that, you know, this decision hit, and I had been sick for a while, and you know, I was just trying to get my act back together with the podcast and everything, and being active and doing the advocating I want to do. And this came in, this decision early. I don't know what we could have done in the next couple months before they decided. The fix was interest in, but it's interesting, and I'll be talking about that. But it is interesting too that it's kind of a mixed bag because the U.S. Census Bureau just announced that they will be employing multiracial with a capital M for all of their data presentation. So basically, that'll be going, going to the charts, tables, reports, and basically those are charts, tables, and reports on how the multiracial paper. A population is blowing up and will be blowing up as they track us into the future. So they will be saying multiracial in these categories, and that's amazing. And because I think about it, and I think about the census, and it's a mixed bag with them, and there's something else going on with the actual census. But a few years ago, when I first found out about Multiracial Heritage Week, I didn't really know about it for a lot of years. Even though it's been around for several years, it was, by the way, it's right around the corner. So June 7th through the 14th. And of course, Loving Day falls on the 12th. And so it's only a month and a half away, and really looking forward to that. But because these are our holidays, but they're also all inclusive because our multiracial heritage, as I've said before, can be any race. So that's what the multiracial identity means for me. Is the Multiracial Heritage Week was my kind of window into it and my door into it. Because when I say I'm a multiracial person and my multiracial heritage is African American and white, that's all in one. That's not one standing for the, that's all from, that's my effort to tell the world that not only do I embrace my multiracial identity, I embrace all of my multiracial heritages. They all go hand in hand, and that's part of what the multiracial identity means for me. It's multiracial heritages. They're one and the same. So that was my window, was Multiracial Heritage Week. No one drop here. So anyway, and that's what I try to point out too, is it doesn't exclude anything, because the Black History Month, I commemorate Black History Month. I also commemorate the holidays of the white culture from my mom's side, many of which are problematic that all of us kind of. And then I also like to commemorate Multiracial Heritage Month or week as well. And but it's for all of us. And but as I've also said before, I didn't know, but and that's what I say, I didn't know about all this just a few years ago. I just knew that I was tired at 50 years plus old of being erased routinely in this country, and that was the example I brought up when I did address the Office of Management and Budget when in the public comments that we were talking about for this whole decision. Is I was just erased in a survey that I had been taking not to 2 weeks before I gave that statement where there was no place for multiracial there. And that's outrageous. But anyway, so I jumped online back a few years ago, and that's when I saw the U.S. Census Bureau posting about Multiracial Heritage Week. And it was really one of the few posts there on Instagram, especially, but they are also on Facebook, and a little ditty about Multiracial Heritage Week and a cool picture of the interracial family. It's just really cool. We'll take it. But, and I was encouraged because especially after I found out that they've been tracking the explosion of the multiracial population in America for decades, and they had to be saying something. They weren't going all the way, and they finally did go all the way and actually humanize us with the capital M multiracial designation. But I mean, we're about to triple in the coming decades. I guess they finally realized that dehumanizing 34 million people and exploding and growing fast, it's just not practical. And it just didn't make any sense to them. They're on the front lines of this. But it looks like the Office of Management and Budget and everyone else involved in this process, with there's councils and academics, and they're reviewing and changing the Directive 15. It's clear that they're not on the same page with that, and they thought differently. And And while the U.S. Census Bureau can decide what it wants to do internally, it's the Office of Management and Budget that oversees this entire decision. They don't make any singer really, but I mean, they're supposed to, and exactly what will be on the Directive 15 list. The Census Bureau can decide how they manage their data internally. But then that's the actual question. Get to the actual question on the US Census that comes out every 10 years, and then also all of the government standards in terms of forms, in terms of any of that. It just flows downhill from this decision in that list, whether it's in the schools, the medical fields, on and on, civil rights, you name it. It sets the standard, and it's a minimum standard, but it sets the standard. But let's be clear again, and that's what's important after this decision's come out, and that is that the Office of Management and Budget doesn't necessarily work for the American people per se. It works for the president, and it even says it on this website. The Office of Management and Budget fulfills the vision of whatever politician sitting in the White House, and that's very dangerous in relation to this issue. And this last review really demonstrated why. And so that's where I am now. And I'm all about indicting and exposing this entire process. This was supposed to be a public review of Directive 15, but it cut out direct stakeholders. And that's Project Race, and whether you're in that group, and I am, and I'm a proud member, but if you don't agree with them or whatever, they were direct stakeholders. They've been fighting this fight for decades, dealing with these politicians, with these, well, basically, career bureaucrats and career government people and officials involved in this decision. Susan Graham had been dealing with these individuals for years, and they just cut her out right before this decision came out early. There'll be a lot of excuses that try to say, well, now this was a public decision and we held public sessions, public comment sessions. And what I can say is I was at two of them. Project Race, that's how I met Susan Graham. I've said that before. She contacted me about getting on there and talking to them and saying and telling them in these so-called public comment sessions that what was important to me and why this is important to me and why this is dehumanizing, that we're not on this list and that we can't. And so, but I don't know why they really did it, quite honestly, after experiencing it, because they didn't really listen. And I don't know really how many people were supposed to be available to get on Zoom in that particular day to impress upon these government agency heads, which was with a lot of them there, the importance to 34 plus million people that we deserve respect of a racial designation recognized by the United States government. That, by the way, is not an acronym or a category or a. But in and then in the last session, we were supposed to call in, and that was actually dominated by African American advocates who are trying to get the American descendants of slavery on the list. And I don't know if it was instead of African American or with, but I'm not sure which one. But that didn't happen, and neither did multiracial with a capital M. And I never got a chance to speak. And I never felt like my voice was heard, and I know that the advocates that were there felt the same way. So now there's something else that I did want to make clear at this point. What we actually were fighting for, what we're talking about with the multiracial with a capital M, because all the way back when Susan Graham and Project Race were in this fight in the 90s for multiracial, it was always, and it's always been and always is, it's multiracial, then you put the two races or more, or you select all that apply. So it's never been just, oh, I'm multiracial and that's all I am. And that's kind of against what multiracial means in a lot of ways. And it definitely is what multiracial means to me. So when that's what you hear from me, I'm a multiracial person, and my multiracial heritage is African American and white. That's the whole sentence. It's not, this is standing in place of the other, unless some jackass is coming at me with, what are you? And it's, I'm multiracial, screw off. But I think some people have the idea that this is advocating to stand in place of that. and stand in place of the multiracial of your what makes up your heritage. But that's the concept we're trying to get, that I'm getting around, and that is that the multiracial identity is multiracial heritage. And that's what it's all about. It's really about, and that's what this fight was all about. It was always just about adding the dignity of a term that is a dignified, and it's, as Susan Graham said, I always repeat it, a dignified, appropriate, and respectful term for our racial identity, multiracial. And then the standard would be to require that the place is there to pick your races or state your races that make up your multiracial heritage. That's all one. That's the only way we get aggregated that way. That's the only way they find out how we're coming together, because the census does keep track of that. They know how many, theory, it's accurate, how many white people got together with African American people, for example, and how many Native American people got together with, and how many multiracial people got together with other multiracial people. It gets complicated, and that's one of the reasons why they never wanted to do this, is because they're going to have to aggregate this data, but too damn bad. Here we are. And so figure it out. The Census Bureau's showed an effort to try, at least with their decision. So this was the fight in 97, when the last review was in Directive 15, and that's the fight now. It's not a reduction, it's not a hiding, it's a proud showing, and it's also, they're one and the same. My multiracial identity is my multiracial heritage in so many ways. So that's something I wanted to make clear, because I think it is a misunderstanding sometimes with people who are proudly multiracial. It's like, we're not trying to say you're not Afro-Latino, for example. You're multiracial, and your multiracial heritage is Afro-Latina, what is African American and Latinx. Cool. Just, we can stay, like I've always said, we stay with any way we want. Talk about ourselves any way we want. This is about how they talk about us and how they address us. So that other stuff I don't care about. I care about this decision right here, and how it's going to affect my children, and it's how it's going to affect the future of multiracial people. So, and that's the other thing to talk about, and it does highlight the real dysfunction of this situation. And I have spoken about this before too, and that is that thankfully the Middle Eastern North African term was added to the Directive 15 list this time around. And Susan Graham mentioned it too, and she's seen that they're called the MENA, MENA, capitalized MENA. They've been fighting for this since before she started her fight in 1990. Since and so finally, how arbitrary is it? I mean, apparently for this whole time they've had to pick white or some other race. And by the way, they call that some other race is SOR, capital S, capital O, capital R. They got acronyms for everything. It's crazy. The statisticians and the people involved in this and counting us and keeping track of us. But, and that was the case for multiracial people in the population up to 2000. Like I say, the one-drop racism forced us to pick one of our racial heritages over another. And that one-drop crap was around for a long time. But so, we got there to 2000. The next step, 24 years later, was not more two or more races. It was a respectful name for our racial identity that tens of millions of people share. What we got was SATA, select all that apply. And I just can't help but be pissed about that and just really insulted by that. And I just don't know if I'm the only one, if it's just me that I'm getting, but, and I know I'm not, because whatever you call yourself and however you think of yourself, I mean, we know that we have a racial identity that we share. We couldn't all get together and have these meetings and the Heritage Week, and if we didn't share a cohesive racial identity that deserves a respectful term that is respected and recognized by the United States government. So I wanted to mention in the press release that not the OMB, actually, but the U.S. Census Bureau talking about the OMB changes, and they mention why it was so important to add the Middle Eastern North African terms to the list. And they mention it, and by saying, this is quote, it will inform policy decisions, health research, civil rights monitoring and enforcement, and many other needs. Is it legal? Is it constitutional that the executive branch has unchecked power over something that could inform policy decisions, health research, civil rights monitoring, and enforcement for the racial group that I'm a member of? And then they just cast it aside and not even talk to the main stakeholders about what we need and want in this, and consistently ignore us for decades? It's head-splitting to me that bureaucrats and statisticians are the key to such a vital civil rights issue, and that those bureaucrats and statisticians all answer essentially in the final analysis to one person, the president. And I'm not saying that Biden even knew this was going on or was directly torpedoed anything. I'm not saying that, but maybe there will be some outrage in the future when the next president or a president down the line is sitting in the White House and they don't really care about public opinion and they're authoritarian and they decide that Black or African American should be removed from the Directive 15 list. Just for example, they could decide Asian should be removed or American Indian, for example. I have yet to see or hear of anything that could stop him after this process. All they will have to say is that they held a public comment session and consulted some scholars and academics and decided it was the best course of action. Now, it could be upheavals, there could be riots over it, but you know what? Authoritarian president's ready for that. So what actually was stopping them? Now, from what I've seen in this process, this recent review process has shown me that there's nothing that would impede that. And that should be very concerning for everybody. Now, so this recent review demonstrated that this process shouldn't be what erases or recognizes me or millions of others. And anyone on the list should be very concerned that this power is in the hands of a branch of government that has proven itself to be, they abuse power. Especially when you throw it all in, we want more things in wider hands. You know, this is a civil rights matter. I know that's not the case for every multiracial person, but I know that I'm not alone here too. And so, I mean, I know if we feel this way and we feel like that we deserve this, the dignity of a real multiracial identity, then we need to speak up. So, you know, I intend next, my representative, as I've said before, here in Colorado is Jason Crow. And he's going to have a town meeting when these summers here, this summer coming up, one of these months, I know. And so I'm going to go there. I do want to see him. I've contacted the office before and got kind of put off. And so this is me, you know, rededicating, but with a focus. And that is basically, I want to ask them, isn't this something that should be overseen by the Congress? I mean, I'm not naive enough to think that that would solve all the problems here. But they have a duty to check the executive branch. And you would think, especially as in something that is as directly related to the essential freedoms that were guaranteed as this is. I mean, whether it's in the Constitution or the Civil Rights Act, or it's the meaning of it. And that is that our racial identities have a right to be recognized and seen. Period. And we have a right to have one because currently we don't. You know, and African American people or Asian people, Native American people, Indians, they can argue about what their racial identity means. They have an official one that's recognized. We're still in the stage of getting that even recognized and understanding what it is ourselves and being a community because we're only 24 years old, technically, even though we've always been an essential part of this country. Basically, I say, you know, since this does come down, really, I mean, in the long run, to the president's office, I mean, it comes down to the White House. There, you've got that White House petition where you say, hey, I have this issue. I want you to address this issue. We got to get 100,000 people to respond. What I would ask them to basically directly is that, I don't know, I thought about it. One of the main things I would say is they understand that this process is directly, it's not creating racial groups, but the recognition of, I mean, the Census Bureau said it in their statement, how important it is from health to civil rights monitoring to everything. It's kind of essential in a lot of ways. And it sure was, I'm sure, easier. And they were talking about the local efforts, which I've been talking about. I've been down, I haven't had the energy to do it. I wanted to find a favorable local senator, state senator, or state representative who will carry legislation or sponsor legislation here in Colorado to make multiracial official here in Colorado. Because now, after this decision, especially, I mean, looking local means everything again. And I mean, we know how it was torpedoed in California by Arnold Schwarzenegger after it got all the way up to it and he vetoed it. Or it would be in California. And who knows what the impact of that would have been, considering they set the standard in so many ways. So it looks like we're really going to need to do that. And I was going to do that anyway. I mean, I think it's important. But at this point, we have to really talk about the fact that, well, and that's what I say. And then, the local efforts are important because, they've taken on new meaning now because, as I've said before, they are the minimal requirements for reporting race. States, whole states, schools, institutions, they can adopt multiracial. And now the U.S. Census Bureau has done it. But they can't put that question on the actual, that's a Directive 15 thing. So it's pretty head split all the way, eye popping out, just so mad. But just trying to redouble efforts here and look at doing something different because beating our heads against this wall doesn't make a ton of sense when it's this corrupt and this secretive in so many ways and this performative and in the hands of so few people. So I don't know where to proceed. The Civil Rights Division of the D Division of Justice, I don't know, but I'm going to be pursuing it because we can't just let this lie. And it can't just lie when we're 50 million multiracial people and in 2030, I've said that. I mean, at this pace that we're growing, we've got to be, we're going to start reading these hallmarks of how large our population is going to be. It doesn't make any sense that we're going to be 50 million status. That's ridiculous. We need a name. And, multiracial is it. I mean, for the official, call yourself whatever you want. I don't care. I call myself stuff too. But this is what they're going to call us. And it's crazy that's so close, but Multiracial Heritage Week is just a month and a half away. And so that's June 7th to the 14th with Loving Day on the 12th. And it's really for all our families. It's for all of us. It's for anybody who is all for inclusivity because it's totally inclusive. It's right there in the title. So, and I'll probably be embarrassing myself on Instagram again. I'm on there. I'm No One Drop, NO One Drop. And just trying to get attention for Multiracial Heritage Week. I was trying to see if one of the stars, Jason Momoa or something, catch wind of it and blow it up. I mean, there's a lot of multiracial people out there that have millions of followers, many of which are probably multiracial because we're out there, we're all around. So I put the hashtags I'll be using on my little, the next several weeks on the podcast website. Hashtag This is multiracial was the one I started with my stupid pictures because it's just like, hashtag this is multiracial, if you were wondering. So that instant, just put it on there and show how amazing we are. And that was the whole idea to leading up to Multiracial Heritage Week. And it's important community building that we need to be doing. That's all there is to it. And so we can see we can come together and kids come out and they don't feel lost. They don't feel like they don't belong somewhere because they're multiracial. They know exactly what they are. They're multiracial people and they get to love their multiracial heritage if they're so inclined to. And that's new. I never got that. I know even, well, I'd say my wife, who's younger than I am, was able to experience more of an integrated upbringing, but the multiracial part in terms of that's something that's been built on. I'll put the hashtags I'll be using on the podcast website. Somewhere I got in my head that posting unflattering pictures of me, maybe some heartwarming pics of my interracial family that I'm very proud of, would get some attention for MHW 2024. It was 2023. I actually started before then, just to get something going online. We're a beautiful community. We're an amazing community, and this is our chance to show it off. The other times are our chance to appreciate our multiracial heritage. That's this too, and to show off what we are too. As multiracial people, we have every reason in the world to be proud as hell as who of who we are, and no reason to be embarrassed, which some multiracial people are made to feel embarrassed for who they are, and not just by white people either. I'll say it again, it's true, because just between me and you, that was where I had first heard the term mixed. And that was in the South. And it was from black people. And so I thought, I've been thinking long and hard about why that's always, that term is always, that's why. And it's never been one I chose. And it's always been a sign of racism from people of color to me. Because white racists down the South would call me something else. So anyway, but it's clear we've got a lot of community building to do as our population blows up, and creating that place for our children to come and demand respect for themselves and for their racial identity. And like any other racial group, we're never going to agree on everything, but we're members of a racial identity that has not been allowed to exist since 1930, and it still technically isn't. We're still technically dehumanized. So when we were called, and that was all of it back when we were called mulatto, among other things. So that's how far back that goes for the last time that we were, and it was terrible. I mean, it wasn't a good recognition, obviously, but at least we were being counted, and we were being counted for what we were. Now it's time to be encountered for what we are and who we are. What we are is multiracial people, and who we are is multiracial heritage. It's long past time. I'm done being erased, and I'm done being dehumanized by acronyms and old racist slurs. And I just know that for sure, and I know that after this decision and hearing it, I know it even more in my heart. Making multiracial official, I always say that's the other one of my hashtag make multiracial official, is only the first step for our community to God knows what. I mean, to we'll be talking in further episodes. It's not just the Census Bureau that's seeing that we're important for the future of America. We could have an amazing role in trying to bring the end of racial division, or at least bringing people together. Racial division will probably always exist, but I mean, more people come together than not. And we're at the forefront of that. And it may seem like right now our country, and it is, we're more divided than ever, but really the history is being made with our community, because we don't get multiracial people unless people of other races or multiple races came together. And that's a beautiful thing. That's one of the meanings of multiracial identity for me. That's an important reason. And basically, in our loves and in our lives, we're coming together. In the episode, actually, I was going to publish next, instead of this one, I had planned, and I'm going to have to push it. But I was going to talk to my son. When I first started talking to him, he was 12, and now he's 13. But 12 is the median age, as I mentioned, of the multiracial population in America. So the majority of people, multiracial people, are kids. And we're the youngest racial group. His integrated perspective on not just race, but life in general, I pray is an example of what can be for the future. And I know that a huge part of it is because, and he's a brilliant kid, it's not just It's because of his integrated upbringing. It's because he's multiracial. It's because he loves and has had access to all these amazing. He's Native American, Lakota. His grandfather's Chinese. They got history going back 1,000 years there. It's incredible. And so it's just an amazing situation there. And so that's what I hope for this. When I say we need this race and we need this designation for our race and we need these things, I'm not trying to create divisions. I'm not trying to advocate divisions, but we can't be on the forefront of anything unless we're seen. If we're erased routinely, well, there you go. So, thanks for joining me for episode 6. And as I get more energy back and get back into the flow of things, I'll be doing more episodes and like I say, recording my local efforts to contact my local representative, my state representative, and my state senator, as well as my national representative, and advocate for multiracial. Advocate for the dignity that the OMB just decided yet again not to show us. So, no victory here, just more to do. But that's cool. We'll do it. I'm up for it. As long as I don't get sick for a month again, I'm up. Thanks again for listening. I really appreciate it. And I hope you join me for episode 6.